Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to Max and Friends. Wow, I feel like I haven't been here in a long time, because I haven't. I got to give a big thank you to Sean Scott. He held down last week's show. I was traveling. Well, speaking of traveling and all these weekends of fun, happy 5th of July in Venezuela, and happy 4th of July weekend to all of you who celebrated. Y'all been tweeting me your firework pictures and everything, and they are just so beautiful, and all your barbecues and everything, so thank you for that. I love you all for tuning in. If it's your first time, welcome, because we have a big guest joining me tonight. Big in the ass. Twitter has been blowing up since we've announced him joining Max and Friends tonight about his amazing book, Confessions of a World Child, and there's a second one that we're going to talk about tonight. So we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. We really do. Sakhar Kazal is joining us, and then after that, Matthew Vines will be here with his book, God and the Gay Christian, because I got a tweet actually about this Upworthy.com video by Erica Williams-Simon, who was quite vocal about what was going on with this book, and in a good way. There are six scriptures about homosexuality in the Bible, and here's what they really say. So we're going to talk about that. But before we talk about that, we're going to talk to my friend Sakhar, who I met in New York through my friend Constantine, who's an amazing film director, and he's in London right now. And he said, bring up with Sakhar what he thinks about Greece right now. But there's so much to talk about that we really just have to stay focused on the book, on his second book, and just everything that he's up to. There's so much going on, and I love you all for tweeting. I love all of your questions, and just before the show, we spoke. I spoke directly to Mr. Kazal about what's going on with all these questions and if we're going to have time to ask all of them, and what we're going to figure out is doing a Q&A possibly during sometime this week, because there's just so much going on that we really appreciate all of your questions, but we're not going to be able to ask them all because I have my own questions. So all over the world, thank you for tuning in. It is all about love. Love wins. We were talking about that last week here on Max and Friends, even though I wasn't here. So we have a really great song that is kind of a surprise. Let's just hit it. عايش حالة حب معك واخداني وصعب انها تتكرر تاني وبعيشها لو انت بعيد او قدامي واخيرا الايام رضيوا علي اخيرا جه يا حبيبي يوم لي ارتاح من قسوة ايامي سيبني اسرح فيك شوية وانسى ايام ضاعوا مني نفسي عمري يعدي بيا وانت بعاني دول حضني وانا جنبك شايفة منك حاجة من ريحة ابويا حب الدنيا دي جواك ومعاك شايفة حنية عايشة حالة حب معاك واخداني وصعب LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. That was just a little surprise we get to do here on the show. You know, I go above and beyond. I hear you laughing. But without any further ado, my guest who's joining me right now is Sakhar Ghazaleh, the author of the compelling Confessions of a War Child trilogy. Palestinian-Canadian writer, public speaker, and contributor at the Huffington Post, grew up in a refugee camp in Beirut during the Lebanese Civil War. There's so much to talk about, including your book, Confessions of a War Child. Welcome to Max and Friends, Mr. Ghazaleh.
Thank you, Max. I hope you're enjoying your 4th of July weekend.
My 4th of July weekend was great, but I think that song is going to kick off my week, because wasn't that good?
Oh, I love Elisa. I mean, she's my favorite artist, and I love this song. It's translated as a state of love, and I love the song, and I love Elisa.
See, wasn't that a good surprise?
So yeah, I was actually listening to it not long time ago.
Right. So let's get into your book. And first, let's get into your story, because I totally believe everyone has a story. You know, my mother grew up in the wars of 1943. She escaped Lithuania, lived in displaced person camps. We've talked about it here on the show before. And then to meet someone who's really like my generation, you know, it's one thing to live with your mother who tells you about these stories. But then to live with someone who really I can associate with and think like, holy shit, like that could have been my life. Tell us about growing up during this Civil War and what it really did to you as a young man.
Well, I grew up in a refugee camp, and, you know, there's a lot of disadvantages to it. I mean, you're living as a refugee is a lot of unfairness. And, you know, living in a refugee camp, your dreams are limited and everything, but also it has a lot of advantages, which I tried highlighting in my last HuffPost article on that, which it teaches you how to appreciate life, appreciate little things, dream big, how to even like work your way to, you know, to make your dream come true and not only about dreaming. So it has like, it has a multi sort of dimensional impact on me of good things and traumatic and bad things.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into the book, let's talk about the cover, because it's this haunting image. And, you know, we spoke previously to the show, but tell me about this cover and how it reflects who you were at the time of writing the book.
Well, the trilogy has three covers, and three amazing artists worked on them. The first cover, the boy looking in the desert, represents a lot of character in the book. It was done by Ali Shihadi, a Palestinian artist from Lebanon. And we wanted a boy that's curious, that looks lost, but is actually trying to figure his way out. And I think Ali did a great job in translating that from my idea to what it is.
How did you come up with that idea? Did you picture yourself there?
Well, of course, like art is a relationship you have with art, whether it's writing or whether it's painting for Ali or creating the artwork or for, you know, someone to think of an idea. So that was the first one. With my first book, I wanted something to be, you know, to be done that represents me and represents the story too. And Ali did it well. Bill Wrigley in the second book, he's an artist from Canada. It was a lot about Leah, the main character, a girl who's very interesting, but going through a lot and everything. So he translated it very well artistically. And with this new book that was released on Friday, Confessions of a War Child, Sahara, the last book, Jeffrey Robinson, a Canadian artist, did a great job because he concluded that trilogy with all the feelings, love, pain, war, and it was a process. I mean, it was, you know, a lot of sleepless
nights. Well, this trilogy was a process. Why did you find it so important to write it? What was the real purpose behind it for you?
Well, a lot of it was, you know, writing as a process is like praying, and it's a form of praying and a form of purity in a way, because I don't believe there's anything that is fiction. Every fiction has a story behind it. And when you're writing, you're thinking of real people, real events, and all these things. It becomes sort of a ritual, a ritual practice that's so good for the soul. Like you're thinking of people, even if they're far away or they're not living anymore, but you think of them and everything. You can actually give them life again. You can see their lives, interact with it. And you know, writing, I found it as a hobby, and then it's become a, you know, I was always passionate about it, and you're always passionate about hobbies, and then now it became something that I live with, and I love living with writing.
How is it that it was a hobby, and now it's kind of turned into a career? Where was that change, that transformation?
Well, so it's still, you know, it's still, I love writing. I mean, whether I'm writing a new book or writing an article, or there's a process, there's my, you know, my editor is another country, and my, you know, and there's a lot of work and a lot put in it, but it's a beautiful thing when I do it. Now I have to, you know, you learn as you go through the process. I mean, my second book, my third book to my first book, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of growth you do. And with growth comes more responsibility. If you had a sentence that was like weird at the beginning, and it's a hobby, so a hobby, you do it. And even if you make a mistake, you're learning and standing up and everything. And with writing, the same thing. It's like on the third book, for example, like if you make a mistake, you have to think about it too. It's not all, it's a you have responsibility towards your hobby. And that's the shift between hobby and writing. I still, you know, of course, I love writing. It's my favorite hobby. But also now I have responsibility toward it.
Well, you're responsible for your words now, right? Because they're on such a level of grandeur.
Well, at the beginning, you are writing first for yourself. Like the first thing you write in life is for yourself, I think. And then you see, you know, other people appreciate it and everything. And you remain, you know, doing the thing you love. And at the same time, you are responsible. Like I'm delivering a character. It's like I'm giving birth to a person. How do you raise them up?
You've given birth to three books. I want to talk about all of them in the time that we have. But before we do that, let's talk about how you've gone from being a refugee to the 36th most powerful Arab under the age of 40 in the world. How did that happen?
It's dreaming and that lesson in life where you work to make your dreams harden, where your dreams real, and it takes steps. Like first, my focus was to get to university. And as a refugee in Lebanon, it's very limited resources for refugees due to Lebanon's instability, of course, and due to the whole refugee situation in the Middle East. And it's just getting worse. So first thing was applying to a university in Canada. York University gave me a great scholarship, the Global Leader of Tomorrow Award, and a lot of generous people around the world also pledged to help my education because it was the rise of social media as well and everything. And I appealed, like, I want to get my education and sort. And that was a good, an essential step. And after education, work. And so there are steps. Every dream is possible. I mean, it's not only a cliche step. Statement. It is possible, but it's not that, you know, you have to go through steps, like you have to go on a journey.
Absolutely.
And,
you know, well, I always say your life is big, keep reaching, because we do have those steps that we have to reach to. But what is the biggest misconception of being called a refugee, or that Americans in particular think of as a refugee from Lebanon?
When you think of the word refugee, you usually think of what you see, what you're exposed to in the media and on the news. You see people in tents, and this is happening right now with Syrian refugees. But there are also refugees, like in my case, where I'm a third generation refugee. I was born in Lebanon. I wasn't born in a tent. You know, my refugee camp was made of houses, 1 kilometer square, which is like 0.4 miles square, with 20,000 people. But people usually think of a refugee as someone living in a tent, so hungry. No, like when I grew up, my parents brought food back home. They tried working their best with the things I have. So there's a lot of elements of the personality of being a refugee that doesn't translate, which is like dignified, strong, persistent, resistant, these things. And that's only, I think, what's the misconception. But the American society in general, in all the cities I've been to, they're very, you know, sympathetic and cooperative with refugees on a community level. Like, I only see on the news of politicians opposing refugees and things like this, but I don't see it from day-to-day interactions in America, from the interactions that I have.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting because did you think growing up that for the majority of your life you had a pretty normal life as you knew it? Or did you think that something wasn't right? Were you taught that you were in these camps? How was it as a child to grow up?
Well, you know, there's a lot of great memories of growing up in the refugee camp. I mean, like the World Cup of 1994, it's one of my first. And even though that we didn't have power all the time and everything, but we still, like, there was a love between the camp itself. There's this love feeling that's the same as growing up in any family in the world. The differences were not inside the camp. Inside the camp, we got used to it. You get used to it. It's your life, you know. You can't compare it to something else because you don't know what something else is. But at the same time, you felt the injustice. For example, I couldn't travel easily. I had to apply for visas and mostly rejected. You couldn't work. Like, you know, anyone growing up wants to go and get a job. A refugee cannot get a job in Lebanon right now that easily. So these things where you feel like the difference. But on a day-to-day level, I mean, growing up as a refugee is as growing up as a millionaire somewhere in the own perspective. I mean, you grow up, you're surrounded by love, hopefully, and you get used to it. You feel injustice when the power cuts off and everything, but then you just go to sleep early. And this is the perception I want to give about refugees through my work. It's not like a person who's like, you know, who we look down to. No, it's a person who might be, you know, who might teach us a lot about strength or love or passion, or who might share these stories and lessons with. And that's important right now.
It's our next inspirational speaker. On that note, stay tuned because you're listening to What here on LA Talk Radio? Hit it. LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Yes, we are looking at your tweets right now. And Nada Saeed says, I'm listening from Egypt and sends greetings. So greetings back to you. Thank you for tuning in. Now, we were just talking about love and about the whole misconception of, you know, of these refugee camps. And here you are, an author now with your trilogy, with your books, with the Huffington Post. You are also been chosen to be the social enterprise project for Jordan to be an ambassador for its charity brand. Tell us about that and this amazing scarf that I hear is available and named after you.
Oh, yes, the soccer scarf. I have it here. It's really nice. Too bad you're not, like, on television right now. I would have shown you, Max.
Tweet the picture. Tweet it.
I'll tweet a picture, sure, but none right now. Back to the question. So the social enterprise project in Jordan is a great project that works with women in Jerash camp, and it provides employment. And I'm all for aid in the form of employment versus aid in form of donations that are employment enables refugees. And that we also need to focus on. And SEP Jordan has this project, provides employment. They came to me, Roberta Ventura. We spoke about creating a scarf. And it's a great collaboration. The shocker scarf is beautiful. They, you know, we designed it together. I looked at a few options they did, and it's providing jobs for women. It's available on, I'll tweet it in a little bit about the shocker scarf. And it's a great product. You are helping the world, but not making other people, like, you're not making them feel that you're feeling bad for them. You're actually giving them a job like you would get here in America or anywhere when you go to apply for a job. And
absolutely.
This goes back to your earlier question about refugees.
Absolutely. And we're going to put that website where we can get the scarf after. But why do you feel you? Why is this all upon you in this life right now? What do you think it is? Your calling?
I'm working hard. I mean, I've been working really hard on the books, on this journey. And other people are also working hard on their passions. And then paths cross in life, and my path crossed with Seth. And there's another person listening to us right now who has a great idea or a great project. And their paths will hopefully cross with someone else who have similar missions and similar messages. And with social media, we are interconnecting now. So I don't think it's like a, you know, it's not a calling. It's life is predestined, and it is, you know, we create it as we go. So I think it's somewhere in between these two realms that we are, you know, it's happening to me that I'm working with SEP right now, or working with, you know, La Rayanne or Amazon or the HuffPost. And I'm hoping it happens for a lot of people, whether you're a refugee or not, or, you know.
Well, more or less, we're all refugees to our past if we believe we're there, no?
I like that. We're all refugees to our past. I might use it, Max, in one of my future books.
You'll just you can quote me.
Permission now. Great.
You can quote me. But, you know, I always say that we're free from our past and we're free from our future. So all we have is this moment right here, right now. And it just seems that you are so present in this moment. You're totally a conscious thinker. You're writing your books. I want to talk to you about your book, The Trilogy, and your third book, Confessions of a World Child, Sahara, because tell us about the plot of the book, because it's pretty intense.
Well, the book story spans over 83 years and more into the future through the three books. And the three books are narrated by dead people that leave the world of the living and now are looking back at the world of the dead. Mm-hmm. So in the first book, It's the whole Confessions of a War Child trilogy starts with a wedding happening in the 1920s that turns into a crime scene. I think it's the 1930s. Sorry, Max. It's 11:30 p.m. in New York. So, the characters start from that point, from the 1940s. And it relates a lot to my story as a person, because the earliest memories I have are way older than me, because they come from my grandparents' stories that, you know, my grandparents are refugees from Palestine. So while growing up, they told us a lot of stories about the 1940s. So even though I was born in the 80s, but I was affected a lot by the 40s story and era, and I got to read a lot about it later in life. So Confessions of a War Child starts at that wedding. It's inspired by the plight of refugees, my story, and stories of people I have met through life. The first book is a husband looking back at his wife who he left in the world of the living, that they just got married. And it's resolving a mystery about his death and how his death put two towns into war. And this is where war always starts. It starts with a little conflict that could be between two small tribes or two families or two companies, and then it becomes a major war. So with the second book, it was more inspired by everything happening in Syria, the chemical attack in Syria, and how we, the media, are actually putting the narrative of history right now. We are giving articles, videos, footage, and putting our opinion, and this is what is going to be history one day for our kids. And with the third book, it's about the rise of terrorism right now. And again, same style as the first book. It's a dead person looking back at the world of the living that he just left. There's a love story, there's a war story, and there's a love story in a war zone, because war is a lot of stories. And love is one big story of war that happens on battlefields. I mean, it's not only tanks that we see in the media. There are also people living their lives, trying to live their lives. There are weddings happening in refugee camps. We hear very little about it. You'll hear more about it in Confessions of a War Child trilogy.
Would you say you're living your dream right now?
Of course, yeah. You always live your dream. As I said, when you take steps towards your dream, you're living it. You know, it's not like a metaphoric metaphoric thing going on. It's actually a practical thing, which is you're working hard towards it. So of course you're living it. Absolutely. I mean, a dream is not sitting down on, you know, and thinking about it. You actually have to do work towards it. And if you're doing the work, then you're living it.
Do you believe that by following your passion, it will lead to your purpose?
Yeah, I'm a Libra. I'm born on September 28th. So I love the whole balance between things. You have to follow your passion. You have to listen to advice from your you know, your circles and people around you. You have to listen to your gut feeling. You have to work hard. So it's a balance of all these things.
So it says here that you are a dreamer and a planner. So there's that Libra balance right there. You dream and plan at the same time. What's next for you? What are your next dreams? What is just next for you in the moment and in the life of you right now?
Well, right now I'm promoting my new book. So that's my near future career focus. I'm writing new articles for the HuffPost, and that's great because it's always new subjects and everything. There is something I'm working on, and I, you know, for now it's for me, for myself. And then there's a time where, of course, I'm so happy to share it, but it's a new project, a new step in my career. And that's something that's in the very early stages.
Well, you better come back and talk about it here on Max and Friends.
Well, yeah, I'm making an appointment right now.
Okay, we'll make an appointment. But, you know, I was just thinking about this trilogy, and who would you, if this were to become a movie or a docuseries, who would you cast to play these roles in your books?
Oh, good question. Now, there's so every character in Confessions of a War Child is based on a real person. In my mind, I blend them, I change them, but I think of someone when I'm writing each character. And I would have to say, like, there are great names. For Camellia, I have a person in mind. And again, this is another private thing. This is, like, between me and Camellia, one of the characters. But I don't know. There's a lot of new talent that's coming up. Personally, like, since you started playing Elisa in the first, you know, when we started this interview, Elisa, the Lebanese international singer, she has a character in the trilogy, so I'd love her to be her own self. And with Elisa, I think it's one of the few characters that I just made it clear who it's based on. Who else? I don't know. There's a lot of great American, European, African, everywhere. I mean, the world is huge, and it has a lot of talent, and I don't know yet. I mean,
you're ready to get them all.
Right now, yeah, get them all. Get the party started.
Now, who would you be in these books?
Who would I be? So I relate to a lot of the characters in the book. But if it's an acting job and I'm, like, signing with a producer to act one of the roles, I would either do the character Nada, who's one of the main characters of the book, or I love the new narrator of the book, the last book, Confessions of a War Child, Sahara. I love his story. I love his, you know, and I made it, but I just love it as an observer too. So I think I would also cast for that role. If I get the job, I'll give you a cut since you just recommended me in a way.
That's so great. Well, now listen, we've got to wrap this conversation up because there's so much going on here tonight at Max and Friends. But before we let you go, tell us about this wine affiliation that you're with.
Yeah, so it's Sara wine. It's a Lebanese wine. Great wine. I love wine. I'm very passionate about wine in general. And while writing the book, I was drinking a lot of wine from Sara, and we saw that on Twitter, and we started, and this is where social media links you to. And I love this wine because as a kid, they used to do really cool commercials on television. And when I saw it, I loved their songs and everything. And it became a collaboration now where I'm their ambassador for their brand. And, you know, if you like wine, there's some in California, I'm sure. Xara, and I'll send it to you now, Max. It's on me and Eli, the manager of Xara.
Yes, please send a case. But let me ask you a quick question, because we just have to clear something up, because allegedly there was a quote that you said that he demands Syrian refugees to leave Lebanon and be sent back to Syria. What did that all mean, and what do you want to clarify?
This sentence, like, was taken. So the sentence was, I said Syrian refugees should leave Lebanon and go back to Syria. And I did say this. I'm not going to, like, say I didn't say it. I went to Lebanon last year, and I saw that Lebanon, which is 10,542 kilometers square country, is full of Syrian refugees that are fleeing horrible conditions in Syria right now. And they have my sympathy as, you know, as someone who feels traumatized as well, like you and everyone that looks at the situation of Syrian refugees right now. But Lebanon cannot responsibly take all of them. I mean, they're ending up on the streets. I saw a lot of child labor, a lot of prostitution, a lot of things happening out of this. And my sentence was not against Syrian refugees. It was as us, as an international community, we need to come together and think of sustainable solutions for these Syrian refugees. They can't flood a country and cause problems in this country when we are all sympathetic about the Syrian situation. We don't know what's happening in Syria very clearly, and we just need to be smarter in the way we deal with refugees. If a country can host them that has the capacity to host them, sure. But if a country is 4 million people and you're bringing 2 million refugees, how is this fair? And as a as someone who grew up as a refugee, a former refugee myself, I would love ways of aid. Like, give me a job in country X that needs my skills rather than put me in a refugee camp in a country that can't feed me. We have to be practical. And this is where my Libra kicks in. Passion is great, but I'm very passionate about everything related to refugees. But I'm also, you know, I need to think practical things. And if I say a statement like this, it's not to hurt anybody or to be disrespectful against anybody, which is far away from what I wanted to do. It's just for offering new solutions and new ideas that we could discuss and take social media from statements to actual steps that we implement in life. And I'm sure you know what that means, Max. We can discuss it. I mean, we're all calling for democracy and freedom of speech every day of our lives right now. So let's implement it, you know?
Well, and what I love is that no experience or words are ever wasted. Everything has meaning. So whatever people want to get out of things, that's what they'll get out of. But it's all good. It's all good. We should just talk about that wine some more.
You should, well, the wine and my books, you should read Confessions of a War Child trilogy. And I just released the third one on Friday. And I want to thank also everyone that's been buying it, talking about it. This, like, it's just been great seeing, you know, the reception of it. And you should read it too, because, you know,
send it to me signed and I will be more than happy to read it. I need a whole collection of my authors that are on the show. Done. I need a scarf, a bottle of wine, and your book. We're just going to have a whole big Sahar Kazan night here.
The books I'll send you, but the scarf, you go buy it. It's supporting social enterprise.
If there's a charity, I'll definitely do it. Not a problem.
Yeah. Okay,
I'll buy a bunch and we'll give them out here on the show.
I'll send you a bottle or two of wine. Now you have enough of wine and the books.
Sounds like a plan. Now, you're like a total social media junkie, but before I let you go, you're going to let everyone know how to follow you, those that don't, the new listeners tonight that are friends of mine who don't know who you are, who know who you are now. How can they follow you?
Well, they can go to confessionsofawarchild.com. It's my book. Mm-hmm. And it has everything from about the books, about my social media. I think it's the best website to go to right now is confessionsofawarchild.com. Or also
and read the book,
because you're going to tweet it now.
Yeah.
And read the book for
I'm going to tweet it. Confessions of a War Child trilogy. That's what we have here. I'm so honored to have you on the show tonight. You're going to have to come back for sure, because we still have so much to talk about. But before I let you go, we got to wrap this up quickly, because we have a great author coming on next. Matthew Vines, God and the Gay Christian, is joining me in just a moment. But is there something you wish you knew then that you knew now?
I don't know. It's a question I don't like, actually. I just don't like your question, Max. I just like, you know, I like everything.
Oh, but I'll get you to answer it.
No. Yeah, I know you
asked. So what is it?
For me to answer, I don't like it, because I don't like it coming from you. I just don't like it as a question, because there's nothing that I, you know, again, as a dreamer, and I like this title. I think I should put it on my business cards now. As a dreamer, you get to a dreamer planner. That's going to go on my business card. As those two things,
after I came out to my parents, spending a lot of time with them, studying scripture in order to help them see how they, as evangelical Christians, can both fully affirm the Bible and fully affirm me and my desire to be in a relationship and have a family one day.
and just be. Just be a human that God created, right? Without all these additional taglines and slogans and labels that we have. Now, since your book, I mean, there's been so much going on, especially in the last week. How do you feel as the author to God and the Gay Christian, and now knowing that gay people can get married and it's okay in churches nonetheless?
Well, in some churches, but I know for a lot of the people who follow me and who are involved in my organization, the Reformation Project, we've heard from a lot of Christians in our lives this week, just a lot of negativity, because there are still a lot of people who, even though it's the law of the land now, are not personally supportive of same-sex marriage. So there's still a lot of work to do. It's incredibly encouraging, of course, to have marriage equality be legalized nationwide, but that's definitely not the end of the road for people from more conservative Christian homes.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there was a great article on Upworthy.com. That's actually how we found you, by Erica Williams-Simon. And she talks about how you kind of like almost debunk and myth. You're like a mythbuster to the Bible almost, because so many people have, you know, they always throw in your face the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, Genesis 19. What does that really mean to you? And your definition I thought was brilliant. So share it with us.
About Sodom and Gomorrah?
Yeah.
Well, Sodom and Gomorrah does involve threatened sexual behavior that at least appears to be between people of the same sex, but it's a threatened gang rape of the entire town of Sodom against two angels who appear in the form of men. Every other time that the Bible talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, it never mentions same-sex behavior is what the issue was. And the prophet Ezekiel says that the sin of Sodom was arrogance and apathy toward the poor, nothing to do with sexuality.
Mm. And people, I'm sure, will challenge you and say that you're wrong. What do you say to them?
Well, when people want to make that case, I always just want to take people back to the text of Scripture, because I do feel pretty confident in my analysis and in the case that I make in my book, that if people disagree, I just always want to take it back to the text and say, for instance, if you disagree with what I just said about Sodom and Gomorrah, then where in the biblical text does it say that the sin of Sodom had anything to do with same-sex relationships? And it just isn't there.
And what about when God calls homosexuality an abomination? What do you say to that?
So there are – that term is used 117 times throughout the Old Testament, and it's certainly a negative word, but the Old Testament laws have never applied to Christians. Jesus fulfilled the Old Testament law, and so Christians have never lived under that law. So just because something was prohibited in the Old Testament or called an abomination in the Old Testament does not mean that that is sinful for Christians. There are other things that are called abominations, like charging interest on loans or eating shellfish or quite a wide variety of foods that one might eat that Christians don't regard as moral issues today. So that main difference is just that the Old Testament law has never applied to Christians.
Well, you know, because it's amazing, because we can always, you know, pick and choose what we want to work for us in the moment. And especially when it comes to defense and when we become the advocate for God and when we think what's right and wrong. And then here, I love the quote, is which is probably why most Christians today eat meat, use credit cards, wear makeup and support equality for women. Because as Hebrews 8:13 says, the old law is obsolete and aging. Would you agree?
Yes, that's what Hebrews says.
Now, when people turn away from God in Romans 1 and 26 through 27, there was something really fast. I love how you just break all this down and make it so simple. If you're joining me right now, Matthew Vines is on Max and Friends. The book is called God and the Gay Christian. And yes, God loves the gay Christian. And if you all want to hate me for saying that, tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know why. But let's talk about why people turn away from God, Romans 1, 26.
Yes, so Romans 1 is probably the most significant text for conservative Christians because it is part of the New Testament, not part of the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And it is true that the Apostle Paul in that text does speak very negatively towards same-sex behavior. But he's also very clear that the same-sex behavior he's describing is from people who are consumed with their passions and their lusts, he says. Men who were having sex with women who then become inflamed with lust and Dawson or even having sex with other males. It's a very different kind of framework for thinking about same-sex attraction and behavior than what we typically think of today. In this kind of framework, same-sex behavior is much more of a vice along the lines of drunkenness or gluttony that any person might engage in if they didn't have self-control. It's not about same-sex orientation or the LGBT community, people who have a different sexual orientation by nature. And so there's just a wide gap between the types of behavior, the types of lustful, fleeting, self-centered behavior that Paul is describing in Romans 1, and the types of relationships of many committed same-sex couples today.
Absolutely. Well, and having long hair is unnatural, and that woman shouldn't speak in church. And how many women evangelists do we have out there? So many. So in all of the retrospect of all of these biblical quotes and your book, God and the Gay Christian, what is it that you really want people to know about God and the gay Christian?
Well, I especially want conservative Christians like those in the church that I grew up in to know that being gay is not a sin, and that Christians can believe in the Bible and can center their lives around the Bible and can also fully support and embrace the LGBT community. There's no contradiction there. And for LGBT people who have grown up in conservative Christian homes, I've often heard very negative messages about God. The way that those messages have been presented is wrong. And it's just not true that the God of the Bible condemns the LGBT community. That's another really important message for LGBT people.
Now, how are you so sure about that?
Well, once again, I mean, it's a matter of going back to the text. So it's saying, look at these the main six texts that Christians have used in order to condemn the LGBT community. And do these texts refer to anything like the types of same-sex marriage relationships that we've been celebrating over the last week, week and a half here in the United States? I just don't see it there. You know, in the Old Testament, you have a threatened gang rape that has nothing to do with same-sex marriage. In the New Testament, you have Paul speaking negatively toward lustful, fleeting, self-centered same-sex behavior that has nothing to do with long-term committed same-sex relationships. So it's just a matter of going back to the text, which is what I want to help Christians do through my book and looking at it more carefully.
Why can't we just get compassionate and love like Jesus did? What is our biggest problem, do you think?
Well, I think we should, and I think we can just become more compassionate and loving. But for a lot of conservative Christians, since they learned that the Bible condemns homosexuality, that's the way that they learned it, they often feel like it would not be loving to support people in doing something that separates them from God. And while that makes sense in the abstract, it just doesn't make sense in the more practical application on this topic. And so that's why I want to help Christians make sure that even if they're trying to be loving or wanting to be loving, that they're actually living out their beliefs in a way, and that they're holding beliefs that themselves can be lived out in a loving way.
And for those that challenge you, what do you tell them?
Well, it really depends. I mean, there's no cookie cutter response because people come at this issue from so many different perspectives.
They sure do.
I mean, so one thing that I'll tell people if they're still not sure why it would even make sense to look at these biblical passages more carefully, then I'll bring up this teaching of Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount, where he says that good trees bear good fruit and bad trees bear bad fruit, and it can't be the other way around. And I'll say that the church's rejection of same-sex relationships has caused terrible consequences in the lives of LGBT people. That's not good fruit. And on the contrary, many same-sex relationships have shown so many of the virtues that Christians have always upheld and honored in marriage. That is good fruit. And so that alone, based on Jesus' teachings, should raise a red flag for a lot of Christians that a total rejection of same-sex relationships is not a good tree and therefore should be reconsidered.
And God and the gay Christian is good fruit. That is good fruit. And people can find your book on Amazon.com and all the other great sites out there. But I have a quick question. What do your parents feel about you writing this book?
My parents are fully supportive, 100% supportive of me today. It was definitely a journey for them. They were not ready to learn that I was gay. That was not really something that they'd thought about before. and they too had grown up and been part of communities that held negative beliefs about this topic, but they were willing to learn and grow and change their minds. And so today they're complete supporters and advocates of me.
How beautiful. That's the beautiful part of the book, is that they support you now. Was that the purpose of the book somewhere in there?
Was that the purpose, you said?
Yeah, what was the purpose for you of the book?
Well, in many ways, this book is the book that I wanted to give to my dad the day that I came out to him, but that I didn't have at the time. It's the type of resource that it's really encouraging for me to hear about other LGBT people who are coming out just over the past year who've had the book and have been able to give it to their parents the day or the night they come out to them. That's really what it's for. It's about empowering LGBT people not to have to feel ashamed of themselves and not to have to feel like they either have to give up their sexuality or their faith, but to show them how they can hold on to both of them and how they can invite their Christian families, friends, mentors, and pastors to support them in both of those things as well.
To just be and love one another like Jesus has loved us. Isn't that just the basic reality of what we all want?
Yes, I think so.
It's all about love, and love wins this week in America and hopefully all over the world. Matthew Vines, thank you so much for joining me. Will you come back? I want to have you back for Hot Topics when we get into this with people who really like to challenge, not you, but just the word, and just let's just make sense of love. Would you come back?
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, I could also share about the Reformation Project. We're doing a conference in Los Angeles next year in 2016 for Christians who are interested in making their churches more LGBT inclusive. So if anybody's interested
in
that, they should go to the Reformation. Yeah, they should go to reformationproject.org.
Perfect. Reformation. What was it one more time?
Reformationproject.org.
All right, we'll put that on Twitter after the show. I'm going to call you after the show. Maybe we'll have you back this coming week, and we'll talk about that project, and we'll also talk to others who want to not challenge the word, but just embrace love. So, Matthew Vines, thank you so much for being a guest tonight here on Max and Friends.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Have a beautiful week ahead. All right, everyone, we got to wrap the show up. I am already so over right now. I know that they're in the studio just waiting to kill me in control room, but I had to, like, just get all these things out because life is beautiful. Life is a good thing, and love wins always. Thank you so much to now you got me laughing, and here I am. I'm getting, like, little messages. Wrap it up. I'm wrapping it up. Well, Mr. Kazaa, thank you so much for joining me on Max and Friends. The book, Confessions of a War Child, go to confessionsofawarchild.com. And Matthew Vines and his book, God and the Gay Christian, they're going to both be back on Max and Friends. I love you all for listening. Take life to the max this week. All right, I'm so done. I love you all. Have a great week. Good night, good karma, and take life to the max. I'm your host, Max Tucci, from Max and Friends. Thank you all for tuning in from all over the world. Good night.